I think I should have caught on sooner, but you mentioned, what's your bucket?
Uh-huh.
Let the meat cake.
Marie Antoinette.
Yes. So you mentioned her in an episode. And every time I've heard let them eat cake out loud, like when I've seen it on paper, I know what it says. But every time I hear it out loud, I think it says let the meat cake. And I was so confused during that episode. And I, like, confused
let
sense.
Let the meat cake.
And there's a song that says, let the meat cake, let the meat cake. You know what I'm talking about? Do you know the song?
No.
Anyway, so I made the connection because I have heard it and I've seen it on paper. But I did not connect that they were the same thing. And I thought every time, like, I heard that episode, I was like, let the meat cake. And I was like, how does that make sense? Why would someone say that? Why is that associated with Marie Antoinette? I was like, I don't know the story,
you're
right?
You're screwing up your words.
But then a friend made a cake and posted it on his story with that song. And I was like, oh.
There it is.
I finally understand.
All the dots connected, you guys. I'm so proud of you. Some content may not be suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion advised. Oh, Jesus Christ. Happy Easter.
Yeah, we're recording this on Easter Sunday.
Is risen.
Ramadan.
Can I say what I texted both of you this morning? My eyes snapped open and I said, it's Easter. And I woke up.
You texted me?
A deflated air mattress. And I said, the Easter bunny is Jesus's fursona.
Oh, yes.
That was the first thing that I texted to Annabelle this morning. I don't know what's wrong with me. So then I sent it to Colin, and he said, fuck, yeah, you're right. If no one knows what a fursona is, look up furries, and then you'll know. You'll know. I don't want to explain fursona or furries. Just look it up. I'm sorry.
One of my ex-roommates...
was a furry?
No. Oh. She had a date with a furry.
Was he in fur?
No. No. But he kept bringing it up. Ugh. It wasn't even a date. It was a...
meet cute. Meet.
She and I went out to a bar.
Oh.
And we were sitting there, and some Tinder boy was like, oh yeah, I live a block from there. And so he shows up and sits down with us. So it's like interview style. It was fucking weird.
Yeah.
He was really nice, but then he keeps mentioning
that
furries.
He's a furry.
No, but he didn't outright say it. He kept like bringing them up. And then she goes to the bathroom, and then he gets weird with me. I was like, okay, this is weird, but whatever.
Welcome back, by the way. We're in a basement. I don't know.
We are in a basement. I'm Colin.
I'm Sierra.
So she comes back from the bathroom. They disappear, and then they come back. I'm like, okay, I don't know what's going on. But then, this is where it gets interesting, because we were like ordering our Uber, and he's like, oh, I'll drive you home. I'm like, no, it's okay. We'll just Uber. And he's like, no. And... he ends up driving us home, and it was fine, but, like, weird.
He could have murdered you guys and buried you in his old furry suits. Yeah.
Clifford the Big Red Dog.
Clifford the...
wait, I was thinking of Chuck E. Cheese.
Large, scary man. Okay.
I was thinking of... I got the names mixed up.
Clifford and Chuck E. Cheese?
Yeah.
Chuck E. Cheese is a mouse.
Chuck Entertainment Cheese.
Charles Entertainment Cheese.
Charles... oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Chuck is short for Charles.
Yeah, which is... ridiculous, but
what was the name that I wanted to shorten? I'll think about it. Never mind. Okay, nothing. I don't want to talk. It was the name where I was like, oh, if I ever hear that name, is it going to be short for blank? But I don't remember what it was. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. All right, you think about
Max?
It.
Max? MaxiPad?
No. No, not at all. Okay, so put your seatbelt on. Come on.
Max, not so well.
Come on, kids. Get in the fucking car. Everybody shut up. Put your seatbelts on. We're going on a trip.
I always forget to unbuckle it. We should unbuckle it at the end. That would be smart.
Pocket ship? Rocket ship.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay. So we're going to do some role playing here.
Oh, are we?
Yeah. It's going to get real kinky.
Can I be the hot nurse?
No, you're going to be the weird nerd.
Aw.
Yeah, but you're going to do a cool thing, so don't worry about it. So your name is John S. Pemberton.
Hello, I'm John S. Pemberton.
Perfect. You were born on July 8th of 1831 in Knoxville, Georgia. to parents James Pemberton and Martha Gant.
So I'm a Southern nerd.
So you are a Southern nerd, and you are also a Cancer.
I'm a Cancer.
Bummer. You spend most of your childhood in Rome, Georgia. Didn't know there was a Rome, Georgia, but
I did.
Now I do. So
there's also an Athens, Georgia.
Yes. We talked about this on the Olympics episode.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So you have a pretty normal childhood. And then in 1850, at the age of 19, you enter the Reform Medical College of Georgia in Macon, Georgia. Macon. And you earn your medical degree.
Macon stuff there.
They making stuff in Macon. M-A-C-O-N.
They making stuff in Macon. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's like bacon,
it's
but
like
for...
Bacon. So it's like bacon, but for men. Macon.
Engineering is what I'm doing.
Medical degree.
Medical degree. See, this is... I keep getting hung up on the whole Georgia...
don't worry about
I'm
it.
I'm not even following along.
So you're 19, you get your medical degree, so congrats. Good for you.
That young?
Yeah.
I guess 1800s.
It's the 1800s. Nobody gave a fuck. They just were handing them out. Doesn't matter. So your main talent.
Plus, it's like two things. Tooth and teeth.
Yeah.
It's like.
It's fine. Your main talent is chemistry. And after initially practicing some medicine and surgery, you open a drugstore in Columbus, Georgia.
There's a Columbus, Georgia?
Yes. Yeah. So during the Civil War. You served in the 3rd Cavalry Battalion of the Georgia State Guard, which was at the time a component of the Confederate Army.
So you making me a Confederate?
So you are a lieutenant colonel in the Confederate Army.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
This is just I'm going to make him a nerd in the South and make him a Confederate.
And he might be a little bit racist, but we're not sure.
He's a Confederate. Of course he's racist.
Yeah. So... You meet a lady.
That's nice.
This lady's name is Anne Eliza Clifford Lewis. Four names.
Clifford the Big Red Dog.
It's all circling back, baby. So you meet Anne Lewis. Obviously, she was a big deal. She had four fucking names.
Yeah.
And she studied at Wesleyan College in Macon. Uh-huh. So that's where you guys met. You met in college. Huh. You get married in Columbus in 1853, and you have one child named Charles in 1854.
Chuck Entertainment Cheese.
Fuck. What is going on? So we're going to fast forward a year to April of 1865. You are at war in the Battle of Columbus, and you get a nice big old saber wound right to the chest.
Shot to the heart.
Stabbed through the heart, and it's way too late. No, just kidding. You live, but you end up suffering from a crippling morphine addiction. Fun.
Wait. You're telling me. Clarify. I'm a nerd in the South, which is already a contradiction, and I'm a Confederate and racist, obviously.
It's a given.
That married Clifford the Big Red Dog and had Chuck Entertainment Cheese as a daughter, as a son.
Son.
And on top of that, I got my medical degree at 19 for fixing tooths and teeth.
Probably.
And then I get stabbed through the heart fighting for the Confederacy. And now I'm addicted to drugs. So I'm a drug-addicted nerd. Confederate. Married to Clifford the Big Red Dog.
Has a son named Charles Entertainment Cheese. And you're addicted to morphine. I don't know. Your life's pretty good so far. I guess. So a year goes by after your injury, and you are desperate for a pain relief that is actually going to work. Nothing is working. The pain, the morphine's kind of working, but like it puts you in a very like sluggish state. So you start experimenting with painkillers that would serve as morphine-free alternatives because you're a chemist. You got your medical degree. You're allowed to do this, I guess. I don't know who said, but you're allowed. So your first recipe is Dr. Tuggle's compound syrup of globe flower. In which the active ingredient was derived from the button bush, which is a toxic plant.
I'm sorry.
So you're doing
good.
You're
just coming up with, like, herbs?
I'm not.
Globe flower. What is that, a dandelion?
I don't know. I just looked up button bush. I didn't look up globe flower.
Okay, so you're taking a poisonous bush, mm-hmm. button bush.
You are taking a poisonous bush.
Right. I'm taking a poisonous bush and creating pain relief out of it.
Yeah. Toxic. Literally.
So is it like a pain relief? Yeah. I just, mm-hmm. circular logic there.
You did. Is it a pain relief? Yes, it is a pain relief. Just having a conversation with yourself.
I didn't just ask myself.
Well, you did get stabbed in the chest, so you might be losing a couple brain cells.
I guess so. Or it could be the button push or whatever a globe flower does to you.
Welcome back to the podcast where we don't know what the fuck we're talking about ever. And I did extensive research on this. So after the compound syrup of globe flower, you begin experimenting with coca and cocoa wines.
You can make wine out of fucking chocolate? Cocoa?
Coca.
Coca.
C-O-C-A.
Oh, coca. Like Coke.
Sorry. Yes. So eventually...
What's a coca wine? Wine, like, yes. No, I'm serious.
Okay, let me get there.
Did they wear wigs?
You're driving me nuts, man. Fuck. Okay, so you begin experimenting with the coca and the cocoa and coca wines, eventually creating a recipe that contained extracts of cola nut, which makes cola flavoring.
Yes.
And then coca leaves, which is where you get cocaine.
Right.
And damiana, which is a type of shrub. I don't know.
Whole shrub?
Whole shrub. I don't know. Pieces of the shrub?
Wait, shrubs are types of... is also a genre of drink.
What?
Yes.
No, it's not.
A shrub is a drink.
Okay. You could be lying to me and I'd believe you at this point.
What's Annabelle have to say?
Is a shrub a drink? Oh.
This is actually relevant for once.
Yeah?
I can tell you that, like, damiana is being currently sold and it sounds like kind of frequently used by some women, because apparently it promotes sexual something or other, and it makes orgasms really good. Mm. So, like, women have been smoking it. People were talking about it on TikTok a while ago.
Okay.
We all learned.
Yes. I got some more learning for you.
Okay.
In terms of mixed drinks, shrub is the name of two different but related acidulated beverages. One type of shrub is a fruit liqueur that was popular in 17th and 18th century England, made with rum and brandy, mixed with sugar and the juice rinds of citrus fruits. It can also refer to a cocktail or a soft drink that was popular during... I'm moving slightly up the coast somehow.
I'm just letting you go, man.
But it can also refer to a cocktail or short...
Now we're in Philadelphia? I'm confused. I tell you what.
Yeehaw.
I tell you what.
Shelby Ann.
Come get down there to tell you what.
A shrub can also refer to a cocktail or soft drink that was popular during America's colonial era, made by mixing vinegared syrup with spirits, water, or carbonated water.
Okay, thank you.
So basically soda before soda was a thing.
Got it.
Is a shrub. So your shrub you're talking about, do we know if it's a plant?
It's a bush.
It's a bush.
It's a plant.
It's a George W. Bush.
It's a George W. Bush. So he called this recipe Pemberton's French Wine Coca. Okay? You called this Pemberton's French Wine Coca. So you made this French wine... Coca. Or this coca that had French wine in it or whatever the fuck it was. So it had amounts of alcohol in it. It also had cocaine in it. And
so is this like a CBD drink in today's terms where you just drink it for funsies, whatever?
No.
So it's a painkiller.
Right now it's being advertised as medicine.
Okay.
It's medicinal.
Do you drink the whole bottle or is it like a...
We'll get there.
Okay.
So, with public concern about drug addiction, depression, and alcoholism among war veterans, your medicine was advertised as particularly beneficial for, quote, ladies and all those whose sedentary employment caused nervous prostration, unquote. So, ladies and people that sit. I don't know.
People in offices.
So...
People with bone spurs that didn't go to war. Right.
people with osteoarthritis that they inherited genetically. So we're going to fast forward again. We are going about 11 years. Yeah, to 1886. So Atlanta, this is where you're living now. You moved to Atlanta. And Atlanta enacts temperance legislation. Mm-hmm. So prohibition, basically. Right. No booze, no fun. So you are freaking the fuck out because your French wine, coca, has...
French wine in it.
Your medicine has booze in it, so it's illegal. So you have to produce a non-alcoholic alternative to your French wine coca. But if you took the booze out, you had a really bitter tasting drink, probably because of the cocaine. That's my thought. So then you added a bunch of sugar to it.
Right.
Like a bunch. And you relied heavily on a drugstore owner named Willis E. Venable to test and help perfect the recipe for the beverage. With Venable's assistance, you worked out a set of directions for your drink's preparation. Here's the basis of it. You blended the base syrup with carbonated water by accident when you were trying to make another glassful of the beverage. You then decided to sell it as a fountain drink rather than a medicine.
Ooh.
Your bookkeeper, Frank Mason Robinson, came up with the name Coca-Cola for the alliterative sound, which was popular among other wine medicines of the time. Yeah, bitch, we're talking about Coca-Cola.
Yeehaw!
And Coke. And I'm going to be saying that word a lot. So.
I figured once you said Coke and Cola in the same sentence.
Yeah. And this all stems from Annabelle. She has a crippling Coke addiction. Not cocaine. Coca-Cola. Crippling Coca-Cola addiction. Literally, like, it's crazy sometimes. I think we are at the same level with my nicotine addiction and her Coca-Cola addiction. Yeah. I'm reading you to filth while you're in the room. Get over it. And this episode is mainly just to talk about Coca-Cola because I find it to be a very interesting company, especially with their marketing, which is, like, the main reason. But we'll get into that in a little bit. But also, I kind of just wanted to scare Annabelle. Just a tiny bit.
They used to be super racist, and are they now? We'll find out. Mm.
So Frank Robinson, who is your bookkeeper, wrote the Spencerian script on the bottles and all the ads. So that famous Coca-Cola script is his handwriting, is your bookkeeper's handwriting. You made many health claims for this product, Pemberton, touting it as a valuable brain tonic that could cure headaches, relieve exhaustion, and calm nerves. You also marketed it as, quote, delicious, refreshing, pure joy, exhilarating, and invigorating, unquote. Those are just, like, describer words.
Yeah.
I don't really know if that can encompass a taste, but go off. So soon after Coca-Cola hits the market, you fall ill. And you're almost bankrupt. Sick and desperate, you begin selling the rights to your formula to your business partners in Atlanta. Part of your motivation to sell was that you still suffered from an expensive and continuing morphine addiction. You cannot shake that shit, man. It is stuck on you like glue. So you had this hunch that your formula, quote, will someday be a national drink, unquote. So you attempted to retain a share of the ownership to leave to your son. However, your son just wanted the money. Charles Entertainment Cheese just wanted the money. He didn't care about Coca-Cola. So you both decide to sell it in 1888. You sold the remaining portion of the patent to a fellow Atlanta pharmacist, Asa Griggs Candler, for $1,750. So adjusted for inflation, that will be $47,230.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And then you died. From stomach cancer at the age of 57 in August of 1888. Your son continued to sell your formula, but 6 years later, he died having succumbed to an opium addiction. So everybody's addicted to everything. But the Coca-Cola legacy lives on. The Coca-Cola company was founded in 1892, and Coca-Cola was registered in the U.S. Patent Office in 1893. Under Candler's leadership, sales rose from about 9,000 gallons of syrup in 1890 to 370,877 gallons in 1900. So within 10 years, there was a 4,000% increase of sales.
Jesus.
Nuts.
Yeah.
Also during that decade, syrup making plants were established in Dallas, Los Angeles, and Philadelphia, and the product came to be sold in every U.S. state and territory, as well as in Canada. In 1899, the Coca-Cola Company signed its first agreement with an independent bottling company, which was allowed to buy the syrup and produce, bottle, and distribute the Coca-Cola drink. So this kind of confused me at first. But basically, they would reach out to all of these bottlers.
Right.
And they would say, you can have our syrup, but you have to provide the bottle that we approve.
Well, so I think I have a question before you go into this.
Okay.
So before this, mm-hmm. you would sell the recipe. So you would say you're a soda shop.
Mm-hmm.
You would take the syrup that's already made mm-hmm. and you would add the other ingredients that were necessary and mm-hmm. sell it in your shop under that.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're talking about producing it before it goes out. They're selling something else other than the syrup.
Right. So before, they were just selling the syrup in soda fountains. Because right. when Temperance and Prohibition were around, the soda fountain was the place that you would go to hang out. Like, mm-hmm. that's where you would go to hang out after work because you couldn't go to the fucking bar, so you go to the soda fountain. And then the bottling process became
right. okay. So you can forefront. Enjoy it at your home.
Right. So people could buy it for right. themselves. They didn't have to go out to the wherever to drink it straight out of the fountain. They could buy it for themselves.
Right.
So basically, these bottling plants were like giant soda fountains.
Right.
And
okay.
they were the ones that were in charge of, they would get the syrup from Coca-Cola, but then they would have to provide the bottles and the carbonated water, and they would be in charge of distributing it too.
Gotcha.
So the first Coca-Cola bottle, which I'm sure we all know what it looks like, the very curvy,
yeah,
curvy yeah. tip top, you know? So the first Coca-Cola bottle was designed in 1915 by the Root Glass Company. The bottle designer decided to base the bottle design on the soda's two ingredients, the coca leaf or the cola nut.
What?
Dean couldn't find any photographs of either, but became inspired by the cocoa pod and transformed the shape of the pod into a bottle. So the prototype that was approved never actually made it into production because its middle diameter was larger than its base, making it unstable on conveyor belts. So gotcha. Imagine like your Coke bottle and how it like curves up and then in like an hourglass kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah.
That middle part where the Coca-Cola logo is was super wide and it looks super goofy. But then they shrunk it a little bit in the middle and that's your standard Coke bottle now.
Yeah.
It really hasn't swayed
yeah.
very much. So the Coca-Cola Company was then sold in 1919 for $25 million, which is a ton of fucking money.
That's their currency then.
Yeah. So. That's nuts.
Yeah.
To a group of investors led by an Atlanta businessman named Ernest Woodruff. His son, Robert Winship Woodruff, God, guided the company as president and chairman for more than 3 decades. So Woodruff is who we'll be talking about, Robert. Under Robert's guidance, the company established the foreign department, later to be known as the Coca-Cola Export Corporation. Sorry. I think I just had a stroke. This set up official bottling plants in over 27 countries and allowed Coca-Cola to oversee all of them.
Okay.
So we are reaching across the globe at this
yeah,
point.
Yeah, yeah.
While Coca-Cola provided the flavoring, each country provided its own bottling equipment and sugar for its own production.
Right.
Coca-Cola sponsored the 1928 Summer Olympics in Amsterdam, where people from all over the world became familiar with the Coca-Cola logo, which appeared on everything from hats and bulletins to the walls of the city streets.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, Coca-Cola was being crazy advertised in America, too. It was
yeah.
like there were advertisements on the sides of barns on, you know, while you're shopping, like all that shit. But Coca-Cola quickly became associated with like the ideal American life and became known internationally as a patriotic American icon. Fuck the bald eagle. Give me a glass of Coke. Thank you. So in 1929, the company found a way to completely remove all the active cocaine from the coca leaves once it became clear that cocaine isn't a magical drug. Like, it's magical for, like, frat boys and sorority girls, but not for, like, regular people. You know?
Yeah.
So, let's talk about World War II.
Yay!
So, and this is just one side of very many Coca-Cola World War II stories.
Right.
Coca-Cola X World War II collabs. So we're just going to talk about one. But in 1941, America entered World War II and thousands of U.S. citizens were sent overseas. Blah, blah, blah. We've heard it before. We talk about World War II all the time on this podcast. So to show support for the troops, Coca-Cola president Woodruff ordered that, quote, every man in uniform gets a bottle of Coca-Cola for 5 cents, wherever he is and whatever it costs the company. Period.
Dang. Okay.
So when U.S. Army General Dwight D. Eisenhower saw the early success of bottling plants, he sent a pressing telegram addressed to Coca-Cola's headquarters in Atlanta. Dated June 29th, 1943, his request included 10 portable Coca-Cola factories, 6 million filled bottles of Coke a month, and the materials and resources to provide American GIs with refreshingly cool Cokes.
That's insane.
Now, what the fuck is going on here on this day? What do you mean?
We're like, we want Coke factories abroad while we're fighting the war.
Yeah, basically. Oh, it gets even worse. So, anything that wasn't used for survival during the war was viewed as non-essential, obviously. And that non-essential stuff also included crates of Coke.
Right, yeah.
But Eisenhower sends out this plea to the Coca-Cola company, we need Coke. And Coca-Cola, the high-level executives in the Coca-Cola company got that letter from Eisenhower, and they were like, we need to come up with a plan to be able to distribute Coke to all of these soldiers. Also, by the end of the war, just for a quick glimpse, 64 portable bottling lines were distributed.
That's crazy.
Throughout, like, the world where the war was going on.
That's insane.
Yeah. So, here was their plan. 148 representatives from Coke filled the ranks with an official title of technical observers, or TOs. These TOs were given army fatigues, treated like commissioned officers, and had one responsibility: to serve Coke to every American GI, no matter where they were located. That's fucking psychotic.
Was it still 5 cents?
Yeah.
So the soldiers, just every time they wanted one, it was just 5 cents. I guess. It was available there.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But like, two of those technical observers fucking died in the war trying to give Coke to a bunch of soldiers.
Man.
But, like, that's how crazy Coca-Cola's marketing is.
Yeah.
Like, they are like, we're for the people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, that's what I wanted to talk about, was Coca-Cola's marketing. And that story is, like, a very good segue. So, 94% of the world's population can recognize Coca-Cola based on the logo alone, even without the name.
And that's crazy. Like, I'm thinking about all the people in little towns that have never seen an iPhone, whatever, and wouldn't be able to recognize
the Amish.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they know what an iPhone is.
I'm sure they, do they know what Coke is?
Yes, absolutely.
The Amish?
Yes. It's not like they're completely segregated from society.
I don't know.
They still interact with society.
I guess. So who wouldn't know about Coke?
I'm not talking about Americans. I'm sure 100% of Americans are very close.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the world.
Oh, who? I'm talking about, like, sub-Saharan Africa or, like,
probably third world countries.
I mean, there's 4%, so maybe island 6%. Nations? 6%. I don't know. I mean,
I don't know either. It's fun. So, Candler, the first original owner back in the 1890s, 1900s, was very aggressive with his marketing tactics, and he he did this thing that had never been done before that is done now all the time, where he gave out free samples to thousands of people as the drink moved into new communities, incentivizing new customers to try the beverage and share it via word of mouth. Isn't that crazy? He was the first one to do that. Like, go around door to door, hand out coupons for free Coke, and then they would like it so much that they would go buy it and then tell their friends about this fantastic new beverage that they bought. You know, that's perfect marketing.
That's crazy.
Word of mouth. That's how we do this podcast. It's just word of mouth. I just yell at people to listen to it.
Yeah.
And here you are listening.
Yay.
Just like I wanted. So after World War II, the company diversified, purchasing rights to orange flavored soft drink. Fanta.
Uh-huh.
Fanta, Fanta, don't you want a Fanta, Fanta? Did you ever see those commercials?
No. Oh,
they were so catchy. But Fanta has a lot to do with the Nazis. So if you ever want me to get into that, let me know. Because I can do a whole episode about that. It's fucking insane. I'm not even going to say basically. No. Anyways. So they purchased rights to Fanta. Then they purchased a canned juice company. Minute Maid.
Minute Maid.
And they created a new product all of their own, lemon lime flavored Sprite.
Oh.
Yeah. It was also around this time that the company first branded itself as Coke, so capital C-O-K-E, rather than focusing on the Coca-Cola product line.
Right.
So probably the most iconic image from this time period, so at post-World War II, is Coca-Cola's use of Santa Claus to promote their product.
Yeah.
While often credited as the originators of Santa Claus, that trope was already in broad use before this time period. But Coke may have influenced the image of Santa as a chubby, red and white wearing bearded man.
And if you are interested in that, you can go listen to our Christmas special episode where we talk about the origins of Santa Claus.
Yes. So this is a snippet from the Coca-Cola website, and I think it's fucking hilarious. So Coca-Cola came out with a song.
Ooh.
In July of 1971, I'd Like to Buy the World a Coke was released in the U.S. and immediately struck a responsive chord. Get it? Like music. This song was so popular, and this commercial was so popular and so moving, that the company received more than 100,000 letters about the commercial, and many people called radio stations begging to hear it. This commercial has a crazy connection to the public. It's nuts. The commercial has been consistently voted one of the best of all time, and the sheet music continues to sell today. The song version is being sung in school glee clubs and church choirs and played by high school bands all over the world. That's straight off Coca-Cola's website. So I think they're embellishing a little bit, because I've literally never heard it played in a band.
I don't know that. I mean, I've never heard it before.
Okay, context. All of these people are standing on a hill. They look like they're in a cult. They have red ribbons in their hair, and they're all holding bottles of Coke. And they're singing, I'd Like to Buy the World a Coke. I'm just saying, that's a little weird. But
but also the time period, that's like very normal.
1971, the hippie revolution. This looks very hippie. Like, this whole music video looks very hippie-esque, I guess. So anyways, I'd Like to Buy the World a Coke. I've literally never heard that song before today, or before I did my research.
Yeah, I hadn't either.
Like to buy the world a Coke. I'd Like to Buy the World a Coke. Crazy cult shit. It reminds me of a cult. It gives me very much Manson family vibes. I don't know why. I think it's just that era for me. Era. Anyways, so Coke is probably the best at growing brand awareness and ingraining themselves in local cultures. Fun fact, did you know that in blind taste tests, people prefer Pepsi over Coca-Cola? But when they are shown what brand they are drinking, the majority of people choose Coca-Cola.
Huh.
This shows the positive feelings people have towards the brand, which has created many lifetime customers with strong brand loyalty. Have you ever met a Coca-Cola freak that collects Coca-Cola memorabilia?
I don't think so.
I have. They're weird. They're just like the Titanic kids.
Disney adults, but with Coke.
Yeah. Also, during the time of the communal soda fountains, before they were bottling it, Coca-Cola was required to be served at or below 40 degrees Fahrenheit by all registered distributors.
Uh-huh.
had to stay crispy, cool, fresh.
But that's also like nowadays, food you want to keep your... Well, but it's liquid, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Like when I worked in restaurants and stuff and we had like soda fountains, all of our bags of syrup sat out. They weren't like refrigerated.
Oh, you're saying anything. Stored.
Yeah.
Not even ready to serve.
They no, had
to,
ready, even
oh, the syrup had to be stored that cold, too.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. They also have rarely strayed from the original formula, due in part to the large, significant public outcry. So, Coke has amazing fucking PR people. I thought Kris Jenner works hard. I thought the devil works hard. But Coke, public relations works harder. So, a memorable example of this is the infamous New Coke debacle of 1985. This is the year, nearly 100 years after Pemberton first created the secret recipe, which Coke decided to change the formula for their world-famous soft drink. How do you think it went?
Probably poorly.
It went so bad.
It was a debacle.
Context clues. It went so bad because people are fucking obsessed with Coke. Uh-huh. Because if you think about it, Coke was really like the first cola soft drink. Soda, right?
Well, also, like, you have people coming out of World War II that are, like, they have their identity tied to fighting war. In the war, and Coke is a part of that. Right. So.
But this is also 1985. Well, yeah, I guess it could be the same thing.
I don't know that that's any part of it, but, like they're very tied to the American identity.
Yeah, and I kept thinking about Annabelle when I was writing this, because she is, without a doubt, unequivocally addicted to Coca-Cola. And that is not her choice, I don't think, anymore. She is being held against her will. She is being held at gunpoint by Coca-Cola themselves because she grew up drinking Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
So not only are you, one, addicted to the caffeine, two, addicted to the amounts of sugar, three, addicted to the taste, because you can't get that Coca-Cola taste anywhere else, if you think about it. You know what I mean? Like, you can't get that fix, quote unquote, from any other soft drink. Yeah, you can't get
Coke on a stick.
Yeah.
You gotta get it in a bottle.
Yeah, exactly. You can't get Coke tablets or, like, what's the...
Coke vape?
Yeah, Coke vape. Horrible. It's a cola, and it tastes like ass, I'll tell you that much. Yeah. Cola-flavored, like, tobacco products? Yeah. Cola-flavored hookah? You wanna die? That shit's horrible.
Why would they... Wait.
Because...
I understand, like...
Because people are obsessed with Coke. That's what Coke does.
Cola-flavored bacon.
It's a conspiracy at this point. It's crazy. Coca-Cola is running the world. We run the world. Coke. Who run the world? Coke. Anyways, but yeah, I kept thinking about Annabelle because, like, she was raised drinking Coca-Cola.
Chugging
it. And I'm sure you had it with, like, meals, like dinner and stuff like that. Yeah. I was not raised like that.
Right.
Like, if I wanted something to drink for dinner, it was either like water or a glass of milk or a glass of juice or I don't know, something like that. It wasn't like soda. Like, my parents weren't very big. We only drank soda if there was alcohol in it. Yeah. That was my family.
Soda was like an adult drink in our, like, Coke specifically was like the adult drink because it had caffeine.
Yeah, me so, too. Like,
we couldn't do that.
Yeah. And then I started sneaking rum and Cokes when I was like 16.
Tight.
Yeah.
I love that.
Like, I'll have a Coke if there's rum in it or whiskey in it. Yeah. Jack and Coke? Fuck yeah. I'll fuck that shit up. Anyways, so the consumers were outraged because they wanted to try this new Coke flavor. Some people were even hoarding hundreds of cans of the original formula Coca-Cola in their basements.
Oh my gosh.
It's like the Twinkie thing.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say the toilet paper thing.
The toilet paper thing. That too.
Yeah. Like, people are Except upset Coke that things didn't... are going to change.
Yeah. Well, and also, they were hoarding Coke because they changed it. We hoarded toilet paper because we were afraid of COVID, so.
But it's the same thing. There's no reason. Like, the people hoarding gasoline because they think that there's not going to be gasoline.
Yeah. I mean, there's not, but like.
But like, you have 30 years to buy a different car. It's not 30? A now problem.
You think there's 30 years until the world dies?
Okay. In a perfect world where the world keeps going and just slowly burns, we have like 35 Instead years of just to like keep
total catastrophe.
Yeah, you have like 35 years to keep buying fossil fuels for your car.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
So within 79 days of Coke starting their new Coke flavor, the experiment was over. And they announced that they were returning to the original recipe.
I wonder if they switched the recipe and didn't tell anyone. They're like, we're switching it back, huh?
Maybe, but you have to realize the culture around Coca-Cola. If they changed the recipe, this idiot would tell me immediately. I'm pointing at Annabelle. She would know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it has such a grip on people. Yeah. Yeah. Because they sold this idea.
What was the change in flavor there?
I don't know. I didn't look into the... I couldn't find any like specifics of what the
it
recipe was.
It must have been something that... like, it had to be something economical that they were going to change. Because why else would they change it, you know?
I don't know.
Unless they just said they were going to change it to raise awareness of Coke being a product.
It's all a fucking conspiracy theory. That's what I'm talking about, bitch. You got your Sierra thinking cap on, and I like it. But you have to think about it. Like, Coke really got its, like, main popularity back in the 1920s. And they were selling, they weren't selling a beverage. They were selling, like, happiness. If you drink a Coke, you're going to be happy.
Yeah. But if, that's still their brand identity.
Right. And that's how it is. Like, choose joy or happiness or share a Coke with a neighbor. They had that, like, campaign for a while where it was, like, your name on the bottle. They never had my fucking name on a bottle.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
I could always find my ex's name, which was just fantastic.
God. Anyways, kind of what I was saying, but this whole new Coke formula made the consumers reconsider the role that this soft drink had in their lives and better appreciate its place as a cultural icon and refreshing drink, which in turn still improved Coca-Cola's sale numbers.
Right.
So, like, it didn't matter if they fucked up New Coke, if they had New Coke and still made Old Coke, or if they got rid of Old Coke and made New Coke, it wouldn't fucking matter because people love Coke.
Right.
Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy. Also, weird fact, from 1982 to 1989, the company held a controlling interest in Columbia Pictures Industries.
I'm not surprised by that.
I think that's crazy.
But, I mean, look at product placement.
Yeah.
Coke is in every fucking movie.
Yeah.
You know the Bechdel test? It's a test you apply to movies and TV shows to see if it represents women well. And you have to find a female character that talks about something that isn't like sex related or relationship related.
Mm-hmm.
And a female character that's also in a leading role.
Hmm.
I could be wrong on exactly what the parameters are.
But
I propose the Coke test.
The Coke-dil test.
The Coke-dil test.
The cocktail test.
Find me a movie or a TV show that doesn't have Coke anything Coca-Cola related.
I'm sure there's a bunch because it's a registered trademark. People can't use it. I mean, the company could be buying out rights, but I don't remember seeing Coca-Cola in the Marvel movies. I could be wrong. Fine. We should try it,
though. Fine.
All right. Sorry. God. All right. We're going to talk about the bad stuff and then we'll be done. Promise. So in the early 2000s, Coca-Cola faced allegations of illegal soil and water pollution, as well as allegations of severe human rights violations. In 2001, the United Steelworkers of America and the International Labor Rights Fund filed a lawsuit against Coca-Cola and the primary bottlers of Coke in Latin America, claiming that the defendants had openly engaged so-called death squads to intimidate, torture, kidnap, and even murder union officials in Latin America.
Oh my goodness.
This controversy gained worldwide attention and led several American universities to ban the sale of Coke products on their campuses.
Jesus Christ.
The lawsuits were eventually dismissed.
Spreading joy.
Yep. And there is this fucking crazy website that I found. It's called killercoke.org. And it is a Coca-Cola smear campaign, if I have ever fucking seen one. These people fucking hate Coca-Cola. And I don't know what's true. I don't know what's not true about these allegations. And, you know, allegedly they'd had all this stuff, whatever. I'm not a fan of, I mean, I like drinking Coke, but I'm not like Annabelle level of Coke. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. If someone offers me a soda, like a Coca-Cola, I'd be like, no. If they offered me a Coke with alcohol in it, I would be like, yes, give it to me now, please. Thank you. But, like, I'm not tied to it.
You know?
I like water and I like LaCroix.
Ooh.
I love a good LaCroix, bitch. It's so fucking good. As long as Coke keeps their sticky little syrupy hands off my LaCroix, we'll be fine.
Yeah. Have you ever met anyone that pronounces it LaCroix?
Do you pronounce it LaCroix?
No.
Oh. Are you sure?
I'm sure.
Okay. I think I have. And I think I cringed at it every time.
It's always, they have to be exactly 36 years old. That's the only people.
Exactly 36 years old and white.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that you speak of it, the only people that I've ever met
yep.
have been 36 and white.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
Damn. We're just out here solving everybody's problems.
Don't be 36 and white.
Yeah.
That's so 36 and lame.
So that is like the very brief history of Coca-Cola. And I really wanted to go more into like their advertising and marketing campaigns, especially with like the Coca-Cola polar bears.
Yeah.
Oh, I love bears, so first cute. Of all. And
she's into those bears
make me want to buy a fucking Coke. Because I just want to be like a bear. It's like the Budweiser horses. You know what I mean? As soon as you attach an animal to something, I want it. Because I want the animal. Like, it's so bad. But yeah, I found this really cool YouTube video. And it's like the disturbing history of Coca-Cola. And so that's where I got this idea from. I didn't want to make it like all dark and scary and weird, but
thank you,
I did want to talk about like the whole World War II. We're going to send in guys from Coke to just make sure that dudes are getting Coke to drink while they're fighting a war. That's silly. Weird. That's
Pepsi would have thrown hands.
No, Pepsi would have sent in Kendall fucking Jenner.
No, I'm saying if they found out about Coke, I'm sure they were pissed. Were they around at this point?
I don't know.
But Pepsi would have done it better.
Yeah.
Pepsi's branding is also off the rocker. Like
Kendall Jenner, that's what I'm saying.
No, it's like they took meth and then told the person on meth to create a commercial. Like everything they spit out is just...
It's bizarre.
Methed up cola. Like Coke, a cola, but with meth.
Yeah, meth-a-cola.
Meth-a-cola. The new Pepsi.
Oh, God. Anyways, that's all I have for you this week. That I hope you learned something. Fantastic. I hope you had fun being Mr. Pemberton.
Yeah.
You had a lot of ideas, and then you died really young.
I was a Nazi.
No, we're not a Nazi. Those weren't a thing yet.
I was a racist, white, southern nerd, and then I died.
With a morphine addiction. You can't forget that.
Sounds like perfect for a racist.
Sounds like Georgia.
Death, fantastic.
Sounds like Georgia.
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw. It's not a lot of yeehaw going on down in Georgia, I don't think. It's not like farms. I think of like Oklahoma, Kansas.
Okay, yeehaw, but...
Cowboy.
They're very southern, though.
But that's like a classy southern.
Yeah, but they still hated black people.
Yeah, no, they all hated black people. That's the one thing they could agree on.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you guys want me to talk about the history of Fanta with the Nazis, I'm down to do that.
I'm a Fanta that.
That shit, I was like skimming over the story today and I was like, this is fucking wild. Like, this is weird. What?
Really quick, I had a teacher named Miss Fanta. She was our Spanish teacher and she was super cool and it was like her branding.
Was she white?
Yeah.
I was going to ask if she was orange.
Spanish teachers were white. Are you kidding me?
I had one white teacher or one. That's not true. I had one native Spanish speaking teacher, and her name was, we just called her Senora, and she was horrifying. I remember she yelled at one of the girls that was sitting in front of me because she had too much perfume on. It was so funny. And then I remember another time a girl next to me was looking at her nails, and Senora got so pissed. She was like, what's so interesting about your nails? Huh? What's so interesting? And then for Spanish 2 and 3, I had Mr. Whitesell, a white guy who owned the local frozen yogurt / coffee shop in my town.
Cell?
And by
incel that's white?
Yeah,
is that what?
Basically. But by the time I was in Spanish 3, he was so focused on Hot Shots, his coffee shop / frozen yogurt / food place. He was so like obsessed with it that we would waste hours of class time talking about his frozen yogurt / coffee shop.
That's horrible.
I cheated on a lot of my tests. You can't take my high school diploma back, just so everybody knows. It's mine. I earned it. I don't even know where it is, but you can't have it. I cheated in Spanish.
Yeah, but if you have class with Mr. Hot Shots, whatever, like White Cell. White Cell owns Hot Shots.
Mm-hmm.
This episode is sponsored by...
This episode is sponsored by thingstodrink.com.
Would kids like purposefully bring up Hot Shots to like get him off topic?
Oh, absolutely.
I love that.
I slept in that class a lot. Yeah, it was third period.
He's a hot shot.
third period because I had first period TAing and I was always late for that. And then I had second period wind ensemble, third period Spanish 3, and I just fucking knocked out every single time. And cheated on all my tests. Got a B. What can you do?
Drink more coffee.
Drink more coffee.
Raises your grade.
Drink more coffee and eat more frozen yogurt.
I guess so. Yeah. Hot Shots is a frozen yogurt place, not a coffee place.
It's a coffee place that has frozen yogurt machines inside.
Okay, that is like a laundromat that is also an antique store.
Mm-hmm. That was a good analogy. I'm proud of you.
There's a new one in and it makes me want to kill myself.
It's a laundromat and antique store? That's a real thing? Yes.
So it used to be a CBD shop with a laundromat.
What the fuck?
But now the CBD shop sold the laundromat portion. So now it's a laundromat with an antique store inside. And there's a CBD shop right next door. And they also sell snacks at the antique store.
Can you pay for your antiques in quarters?
I'm sure you can. I'm sure they have a quarter machine.
Yeah.
But it's the fucking weirdest building in town.
But Mr. Weitzel also had like panini presses and shit behind the coffee counter. Like he sold food and he had a mac and cheese panini. Bitch, that shit was so good. All go to Hot Shots on like a Friday night and like get coffee and hang out, and our friends would play music with their guitars. And then a few of us would go fuck around on the roof of the Rite Aid.
See, now I want to be best friends with Mr. Weitzel.
It was ridiculous. This episode is off the rails. We need to go. We need to get out of here. I gotta stop talking about Mr. Weitzel. I gotta stop talking about high school. I just keep like remembering things. I think I'm going through something right now. But thank you for listening. If you want to hear about Fanta, let me know. If you want to hear about, I don't know, anything, let me know.
Yeah.
And buy our merch.
Yes.
It's so cute. It's very comfy.
There's a new bumper sticker. We probably already plugged it.
Yes. But go support check your that local out. Woman, everybody. And have a good rest of your week. And we will see you next week when we talk about.
Bye.
Bye.